Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. President Trump's legal drama, a surprising resignation from the Bowser administration, three black men killed by law enforcement this month, and spring break mayhem in Miami. We're talking about the top stories of the week at the Reporters Roundtable. My guests are Ebony McMorris, White House correspondent for the American Urban Radio Network, and Jamila Bay, special projects editor for Paramount. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question about any of the topics we're covering tonight at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ebony, Jamila, thank you so much for joining the conversation again.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Okay, so we do have some late breaking news in the Donald Trump legal troubles. ABC News is reporting that prosecutors in the special counsel's office have presented compelling preliminary evidence that former President Trump knowingly and deliberately misled his own attorneys about his retention of classified materials after leaving office. U.S. Judge Beryl Howell wrote just last week that in a sealed filing that he believes it is possible that the president or former president committed criminal violations. Now, Howell did step down as D.C.'s district court's chief judge last week. That's the headline, literally from moments ago, but we are still looking at the possibility of an arrest, an indictment of the former president. That hasn't happened. A Manhattan grand jury continuing to meet in the case regarding payments to porn star Stormy Daniels. Whew. Jamila.
It's loaded.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on. Jamila, I'll let you have the first word here.
Well, first of all, talk about Teflon Don. This twice impeached, single-term president who left office in disgrace and impropriety, I think that's a fair way of putting it. We know that what they're saying he did. In what world, what water is wet news is it going to take? Now, the thing about it is we see that, oh, yeah, he did this. We know. We know that this man treasonously called for armed rebellion against the state, and he walks free today. I am so tired of feeling like Charlie Brown flat on my back having run after a football that Lucy snatched away. We know he did this. He's admitted he did this. His attorneys have admitted he's done these things. I need to find out if my little glimmer of hope that Bison, Letitia James, who's the former attorney general in New York, who started the criminal investigation into the twice impeached single term president, if the investigation she started will bear fruit in terms of some punishment beyond the tongue click and the finger wag. I'll end by saying the world knew. Chicago knew about R. Kelly. It was the state of New York that locked him up. So, New York, come on, Tish James, go Howard Bison.
You know, Ebony, one of the things, if we want to just look at, you know, just the facts, this reporting by ABC News, again, as Jamila said, we knew that he held these documents. There has been speculation all along that even the attorneys, his attorneys who were defending him, may not have had all of the information that they needed from, you know, the former president. And now this new reporting by ABC is suggesting that was the case. That may seem to hold more legal water than this Stormy, this 7-year-old Stormy Daniels case. And the criticism of that has been it was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But that's where we're going to see probably the biggest movement this week.
Right, that is where we are going to see the biggest movement coming this week. I mean, we talked about it. There are like 4 cases that everyone's trying to gather the facts and figure out at the same time. So we've got the former president is going through ongoing legal jeopardy federally and in the state of Georgia. He's facing at least 4 these investigations. We got his role in January 6th, the attack on the U.S. Capitol, the mishandling, like we were talking about just now, these classified documents. And I think one thing I am waiting to see is how the Republican Party is going to try to cover for him in all of these cases like they have done so far. And this is happening on this world stage as we kind of deal with where are we in our American politics and deal with the issue of democracy at the same time. I've been paying special attention today is in this case coming out of New York. But I want to say something that I did in an interview with Reverend Nash Sharpton, and he kind of hit me with something that kind of put it into perspective. When we look at what's happening in New York with this hush money being paid to Stormy Daniels, this is happening in the same building that we also saw, and I don't want to redirect, but we also saw the exonerated 5 case, right? Where we saw
the Central Park case.
Central Park case, the Central Park 5. Go after these black men, right? Call for their death. Put out an ad. And if he is indicted, he's going to be arraigned in the same room by this black district attorney. Now, do I really think it's going to happen? I don't know. Some are saying the case is a little dodgy, not sure what the charges are. Will it be a misdemeanor, whether, like the Republicans keep saying, whether it be a felony or anything at all? But it is funny in how so many of these cases, it is almost like the chicken's coming home to roost, but he keeps dodging so many things. And I think the American public is waiting to see will something stick, as my colleague just said. Will something stick?
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about some of the top stories of the week. And as always, we have some doozies. Of course, starting off with the legal troubles for former President Donald Trump. You know, you talked about, Ebony, the fact that, we've got a black prosecutor in the Manhattan case, and in the Georgia probe, Fannie Willis, you've got another black prosecutor. Talk to me a little bit about the optics of this, because it seems to be more fuel for the fire in the racial dynamic that comes up in this Trump versus Trump case.
I do want people to take a side note that this is why it's important to vote. Right? This is why it is so important. Go ahead. No, you go ahead, because you're about to have to.
Forgive me. I'm so sorry. The vote. I just need 11,000 votes. He knew he had lost. He knew he was illegally coercing. He was illegally coercing the. I'm trying not to use legal language, but goodness, it's hard not to. The behavior of Donald Trump has caused the harassment of black poll workers, has caused the disenfranchise of black voters, and I would argue that this is Reconstruction Part 3, but to spare the history lesson. Whenever black people in this country get significant political and or economic gain, there is a swift and definitive and prolonged backlash. Donald Trump would not have been elected but for Barack Obama and every petty, racially discriminatory thought that man has had. I hope those chickens cluck, cluck, cluck right back at him. And Georgia is in line right after New York.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. Kim, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Yes, go right ahead.
Hey, this is Ken. How are you? Good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate sure.
It. Look, you know, the great H. Rap Brown once said, when you see one, you see them all. Right now, you know, Trump is in trouble for money. It has nothing to do with his inciting riots or violence. Nothing. So it shows you how this system works. And it shows you that we are also in a failed state. Because if this is the only victory we get, is sending this satanic child of Satan to where he belongs, we absolutely get nothing out of it. We really have to start fighting wars and battles that will end with results for the black community. No other community. No frats, sororities, no gender issues, nothing. Only for the black community outside of neighborhood. We have really got to put all our eggs in the basket and fight on behalf of black people. That includes our black Congress. That includes our black clergy. That includes us specifically on every single level. We have got to put up a better fight and a more concentrated, concerted effort to win in the long term for our children. Because this is par for the course. They're all into the same stuff.
Okay.
They're all getting money cut. They're all getting insider trading. And they're all getting away with it. What are we going to do? We have got to go to war. Because we're talking too much about the things that will change nothing.
Okay.
We've got to get in this.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for your comment. Jamila, he said that he's in trouble for money. Well, the Stormy Daniels thing is about money, but the thing in Georgia is not. That's about politics. It's disenfranchisement. It's overturning the vote. But that's not about money.
It's not about cash.
Right.
But it is about political influence. It is about, everything in this country boils down to money.
Politics equals money equals votes.
Politics equals money equals influence equals powers back to money. This person decided to come in, and he was elected by people who thought we need somebody who can bring his Wall Street smarts and sensibility to federal government and give us little people who he doesn't care about a chance to be great again, like he's telling us. And they realized they elected a shyster, a huckster, a fraudster, a cheat, like everybody in Atlantic City who did business with him and everyone in New York who did business with him is telling him. The fact that the material argument here, Stormy Daniels is about a payout, and Georgia is about vote. The reality is this man is about power and
yes.
influence.
Yeah,
it's the same root, different outcome in the trees, but that root comes from the same place.
Yeah,
and I just want to jump in there because the caller talked about money. Let us also not forget that the reason why so much public attention became on Tuesday is because he came out and put out a statement on his platform that he was going to be arrested. And the underlying story behind that is, you talk about money, is that we know that after that, then we see all these fundraising attempts.
Mm-hmm.
So the attention that came, he's the one, just like we even saw with the documents case that ABC is reporting on, it is Trump that is putting us out there almost like performing bait, but we have got to call him, and many have. So let me not say we have got to, because we have been doing this, have been calling him out on the carpet. You have so many different organizations that are around the country, because sometimes I don't always like when we say there's nobody on the ground doing anything. There are many groups on the ground every day that are combating the messages that are coming out, that are working in the education system. The reason why we saw some of the turnout and the fight that we are seeing in Florida and in Georgia is because there are so many grassroots and organizers on the ground. So sometimes I think we need to be careful when we say no one is saying or no one is doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. Let me go quickly to Tish. We've got a lot of topics to talk about. Tish, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Tish, are you there? Tish, give me a call back. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. Let me switch topics real quick because this is another really, really big issue. I'm going to announce it now. We're going to continue it on the other side. But here's the thing. We had a surprising resignation in the Bowser administration. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. D.C. Deputy Mayor John Falcicchio resigned on Friday. A D.C. government employee accused the former chief of staff and deputy mayor of planning and economic development of sexual harassment. He was one of the most, if not the most powerful non-elected official in the District of Columbia. He has served in all three of Bowser's administrations. He was a key figure in her campaign. He was there before she was mayor, working for Mayor Fenty. He wielded a lot of power. And then this happens. I'm going to take a break, and I'll have our guests talk about this issue, because this isn't the first high-profile resignation. Remember, the D.C. deputy mayor for public safety resigned last October, Chris Geldart. So what is the Bowser administration going to do to get through this? We will talk about that and much more on the other side. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insights segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Don't forget, you can also download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Tish, you called back. I'm glad you did. Stay with us. You will be able to hear the program, and we will talk to you next. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM with more of this conversation. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about the top stories of the week at the Reporters Roundtable. My guests are Ebony McMorris, White House correspondent for the American Urban Radio Network, and Jamila Bay, special projects editor for Paramount. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Okay, Tish, you called back. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, yes. I was just wanting to touch bases on the Trump issue.
Sure, go right ahead.
I think nowadays a lot of the white collar crime makers, the people that are billionaires and millionaires that have been getting away with things for many years, are going to jail now. I really think Trump is really facing bars. He's even chanting it because he knows he's at his point, but things cannot be turned around for him. People that have been in his cabinet have gone to jail. So I feel like Trump knows there's nothing he can do to get out of this. No one's above the law. And it's at a point now in today's society and in the United States after the Capitol incident, they're going to slow walk Trump. It's like getting arrested for a candy bar, but your crimes are bigger. But we're going to take the smaller crime and actually get you for it. So that's what it seems like to me. Out of all that he's done, they're going to take the smallest crime, and it's going to be the one that's going to put him behind bars. Even if it's house arrest, it's going to shut him down from running for president again. That's my opinion. I really have strong energy behind believing this is happening, and it's going to get done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tish, thank you so much. One more comment about that. This also coming out earlier today that a lawyer, his lawyer, Alina Haba, told reporters today that the former president is sad but not scared about the potential indictment he could be facing soon. So that, you know, that's also just one of those nuggets of interesting nuggets I should say.
Putting into his base.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's...
This is straight, like, during out these comments that are being made, ain't for me, these comments that are being made are to his base.
Yeah.
To keep inciting violence, to keep inciting, hopefully, something like a January 6th. This man's ego is ridiculous, and honestly, it was before he ever got into office. You can look at his family lineage. Like, it's just corruption after corruption. So those messages are to his base to keep them riled up.
Yeah. Let me go back to what we were talking about right before the break, this high-profile resignation of Deputy Mayor and former Chief of Staff John Falcicchio in the Bowser administration. Jamila, again, I think you had a lot of people really, really surprised. There's been reporting today that the mayor knew about this during the first week of May. First week of March. And was briefed on it, but he did not resign until Friday. And as I said before the break, John Falcicchio was the most powerful person in D.C. Government, perhaps second only to the mayor.
Indeed. This one hurts particularly, just in disclosure, I have used John Falcicchio as a source quite a number of times. I always found him to be thorough, and the guy knew everything about everything.
And a straight shooter.
Jamila, you're asking about this program. However, I think you also need to know about these two things. They came out of the law that got changed back in 2008 when blah, 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 blah. He was a dream source. He was, he knew his stuff, so he didn't mind talking to the press. Nobody amongst us, not that we were trying to gotcha there, but that wasn't a fear with this guy. He knew what he was talking about. He was your guy. It's also enraging because can't a person go to work without having impropriety thrust upon them?
Yeah.
I thought the internet was supposed to fix this. You do in the shadows what you want to do. You do behind closed doors what you want to do. And you come bring your professional self to work. This is particularly a severe blow to Mayor Bowser, who has a huge event about the budget that this dude used to lead tomorrow. I've been shaking my head, and the fact that she knew in early March, but he didn't resign until, frankly, the other day. Investigations have to happen. You have to give the accused the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, well, if these allegations are unfounded, we need to find that. But clearly they found something.
Right.
And it's just maddening because this is just nonsense. Again and again and again.
Yeah.
I want to. Oh, is it okay if I hop in?
Yeah, go
in
ahead,
here?
Please.
It is, and as a DC native, right? It hits home, and it's tiring, especially because it's sexual misconduct. And I've been talking with some people, just kind of off the record, about what they feel and what they think. And many, we know, just like you said before, very connected. Helped her run her campaign. She's already had his historic tenure, and he was a prolific fundraiser. Her first and only chief of staff, right? Many calling her like the ying der yang. And so I think, like you said before, many are saying, what's going to happen? Did she take a hit? Absolutely. But she said, like she said, the city must go on. And we see her putting in Lindsay Parker, who was worked with as John's deputy years ago, and then Keith Anderson, who is now the interim planning and economic development. The interesting thing is with John, he was one who not only served with Bowser, but also held that position. We've never seen anyone hold a dual position like that. But the mayor says that things are going to keep going. I mean, I think it remains to see how this is really going to affect the office, because right now two things that are really facing, two biggest issues, I would say, facing D.C. pressing is one, the crime in D.C. But the second part is revitalizing downtown. And he was really a part of helping to push that revitalization. He was one who we didn't see behind the desk, but we always saw out front. So to see him go down like this, it's almost like, really?
Yeah. Like, and I agree. There are two huge points here. There is the allegation of sexual harassment. And so far there's one person, but already the head of the mayor's office of legal counsel is saying, you know, we're going to investigate this. If there are other people, please come forward. You know, so this may just be the very first situation that we see. We don't know what else is out there, even if there is anything out there. But I'm quite sure that the legal counsel is not going to leave any stone unturned. As you said, Jamila, this is still another, you know, Me Too moment. And, you know,
right.
I've said before, look, people spend, you know, pre-COVID and whenever, you know, people spend at least half of their lives at work. That's where they meet people. But,
right.
And I get that. But, you know, you ask her out once and or him, and if the answer is no, keep it moving.
Because, but, Harold, we don't even know if it was an ask out.
I understand that. But like I said, because in the release from the law firm, the accusation was sexual harassment and unwanted sexual conduct.
Right.
So we're talking about, you know, two completely, you know, two sides, you know, of the same coin. But
if I may, go ahead. I married a former coworker.
Okay.
Okay. We have a mortgage, have a child who talks back to us.
okay.
I understand. You know, and I come from news. You spend 14-hour days sometime. You spend your time in tight quarters. Number one, I want to say this, and I'm not talking bad about the man I married, but I didn't know he was straight until he asked me out because he was so professional and never did anything untoward or said anything off color. I thought, well, clearly he's not into, well, I mean, my ego was different.
I was about to say, vanity, thy name is Jamila.
80 pounds ago, I was like, well, he must not like women then because he is never.
Yeah, because why wouldn't he ask you out? Yeah.
Is he listening?
I hope he's not, because, boy, yeah, I'm going to have to, I'm going to be cooking.
You'll have to answer that, yeah.
You know, there's that. And also, I want to point out, too, people didn't know we were dating until we invited them to our wedding.
Yeah.
To be appropriate and be attracted, but, like, the professionalism has to be there. The stakes are highest. Who does not get fired for sexual harassment? It is women who look like me.
Yeah,
because the stakes are too high. We don't ever work again. These people who have gotten away with it for a long time think they're above reproach. And when they're not, you know, here we go talking about it.
But don't miss my point. And yours worked out, obviously. but the point that I was making was we do know that people date on the job. And we know that people are, you know, they are interested. You know, but if you show interest and the other person says no, you keep it moving as if you never asked. You know, because if you keep pressing the point, if you become obsessive, then yeah, you can lose your job and you can create a toxic workplace and it can get legal and everything else. But the other piece of this is that as far as administrators and leaders within the Bowser administration, as I said, John Falcicchio, Chris Geldart, you know, two of her highest profile deputy mayors, are out. And I will say, it's so much easier to manage things compared to managing people.
I think people should really pay attention to this. And we, you know, there's an investigation going on. So period, next sentence. But to those who are listening, because what happens many times, like you said before, in these cases, other people are watching, and that gives them the strength to say, you know what, I'm going to speak out too. And I'm saying this because I have seen this happen over and over again. Many of us who go to work, we know situations that are going on. You know what's happening. You don't want to be the one to speak out or the first one to take the hit, to go down with the team, because it can be a huge financial loss for you to speak out or to become blackballed. But this is should serve notice. This era that we have been in, this Me Too era, and I even hate using that sometimes, that people are tired. And so this should serve warning to those, if you are in a position of management, not only are you bringing shame to yourself, to your city, but you are, it is just such a deep ingrained corruption that you're not only going to bring yourself down, but so many others around you. So much falls apart at the same time,
yeah.
Right? Just go to work and work. Like, yeah. Can we just all go to work and work?
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about some of the top stories of the week at the Reporters Roundtable. Next topic, law enforcement is really under the microscope right now after three black men were killed by police during three separate incidents. Surveillance video was released to the public today showing Henrico County, Virginia sheriff's deputies restraining Ervo Otieno. He died after that incident. You may have heard earlier at the top of the newscast his mother speaking out again about this incident. Timothy Johnson was shot by Fairfax County police after a shoplifting report at Tyson's Corner Center. Now, police say they would release the video within 30 days. This happened on February 22nd. Tomorrow will be the 30th day. We will continue to keep an eye on that. And finally, 17-year-old Delanio Martin, while trying to, he was shot and killed by Park Police while they were trying to apprehend him while he was driving away in a stolen SUV. Now, these are three completely different incidents involving black men and the police. And yet, you know, I think it just comes down to, you know, to one thing. You know, the question is, you know, what's going on, Jamila? I mean, because the thing about the case at Tyson's, Timothy Johnson, no firearm was recovered. Okay.
Of course there wasn't.
No, hold on. But hold on. And that's the issue that his mother has been very, very public about, but she also said, my son should not have been shoplifting. I mean, she was very, very clear about that, okay?
Mm-hmm. Retail losses are in the billions in this country. People shoplift, all of them, not every single individual, but all demographic of people shoplift. That's why you have sensors and buzzers. Now, this individual was taking illegally a pair of designer sunglasses, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, he paid with his life. Okay, you have a 17-year-old boy sleeping behind the wheel of a running car.
Yes.
For that, let's for a moment just say, okay, he stole that vehicle, which was not ascertained at the time he was seen sleeping. They knew the vehicle was stolen. They knew he was sleeping. He winds up paying for that with his life. A black man in mental crisis, we don't have audio, so we don't know what he said. He may have really been insulting all of those, how many people?
10.
On top of him?
10, at one point,
their
10.
Their mamas and their great-great-grandmamas all at the same time. And he paid for it with his life. These are separate incidents.
Yes. Yeah.
But the root of them is the same thing. Black people in this country,
since we were stolen here, have been overly surveilled, have been overly policed, and we are expendable in a way that no other people in this country are. Look at the numbers, and it's so frustrating, and it's so maddening, and it's the same thing again and again and again. You cut and paste the names, and the stories are the same. I know I've been writing them since the Clinton administration, and it's really tiring.
Yeah.
I was speaking with an attorney, Harold, about the Henrico case. And when I was just reading the comments of his mother, Caroline, she said, all the systems failed my son in an interview. And she was saying from police to hospitals and the judiciary system, she said, they set a trap for him. And I think that's, you know, when we talk about these cases, it feels like a trap. And when I spoke with Attorney Yeary, he was saying the inability of law enforcement officers to properly understand necessary force. And you can apply this to Tyson's, to the Park Police incident, but to understand necessary force is not simply a matter of training. It is a persistent lack of will by leadership that continues to be deadly in far too many instances. And that is the reality.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Charles, calling from D.C. What's on your mind, Charles?
Hey, how's it going, Harold, and to your guests here this evening? I was originally calling about the Trump issue earlier.
Sure, you can comment on whatever you want.
All right, but y'all went over so many things, and then the last thing was talking about Blackman. That's one that I'm kind of most sensitive to about this. You know, one thing that I'll say about the issue as far as, like, these black men killed in custody and how they acted. One, the young lady who just spoke about how we're viewed and how a lot of that is deeply rooted. That's that fear that has been compounded over generations and ages and ages and ages. So when you get into a moment, when you react to something, it goes on what your subconscious already knows, right? So that's why when they have a black man pinned down or a black man sitting in his car seat, for instance, like she was saying, it's fear that takes over. So they automatically go to their black fear. They're fearful of a black man or black woman, even in a lot of cases, is how they're reacting. It's not based on training, not based on anything. It's based on their deeply rooted in their DNA, oftentimes, is fear of a black person. You even have black people afraid of black people, but, you know, in certain cases, like the five officers down there in Memphis, it's deeply rooted in the psyche that they've been trained and it just keeps going over and over and over for years and years and years. I mean, all the way back to earlier on in civilization, how black men was always feared. Like, and that's what happens a lot of times when blacks get killed, is they're already afraid from the word go, that they're thinking that the black man's going to overpower them.
Yeah.
So they feel like they have to take him out. And that's why they don't stop until you're dead. Like, man, he has eight people on top of him. Well, why wouldn't they get up and say, you know, you can't breathe? You know, like, one person on top of you may not be able to breathe, let alone eight or nine. What would the eighth or ninth person be doing or be thinking? How am I, you know, going to be just pile on top of somebody? What would be the point of that?
And I will say, you know, Charles, that, you know, that is one of the many questions that attorneys are going to, you know, try to answer as they begin to investigate this death. But, you know, thank you so much for calling. I'm short on time, and I've got to talk about this last topic that's really, really disturbing. This Miami spring break violence. The Miami Beach City Commission has voted not to extend a midnight curfew in South Beach through this coming weekend in response to the two deadly
shootings. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about what has happened. But if you've watched television, if you've seen the video, the heartbreaking thing is that all of this craziness that we've seen during this past weekend, these are Black spring breakers. And there's been a lot of discussion on network about this, but the elephant in the room is a thing that nobody, is mentioning, is that whether it's spring break or Memorial Day. And I've been to South Beach on Memorial Day years ago, but I went on a humble, didn't know. I just wanted to go to the beach.
Don't age yourself with that language. You've been on a humble.
Listen. I was married at the time, and it was like, my wife said, "Look, let's go to South Beach." We were grown. We did not know. When we got there, it was just us, young people. Again, it looked like spring break all over, and it was a madhouse.
Debauchery and Caligula-esque.
Yeah, but also it was rude and inappropriate behavior, disrespect. The young guys, these late teens, 20 somethings, were disrespecting the late teens and 20 something young women, calling them out of their name. I even spoke to one of them about this. This was years ago. Nothing has changed, but now. Now we're talking about two murders over the course of the weekend, Jamila, and it's troubling because it's us.
It's troubling because it's us, and it was and the reality is this. America is a violent place where people have access to guns and people don't have access to proper mental health care and proper health care. And certainly, we could talk about proper wages. But since there have been young people of firm body and beautiful mind or body or something, they've gotten together at appointed places and Caligula'd themselves. Now, whether you call it Freaknik, whether you call it Miami Beach, I spent so much time 100 pounds ago in Miami Beach. I know those days and miss them. But when the white students do it in Daytona and Fort Lauderdale, and, it's the same behavior, it's girls gone wild and they're just being young and free.
I disagree. Hold on. Let me stop you there. I disagree with that. And my point is this. You can go down there and you can freak Nick and frolic and drink and because I was, hold on. In my TV reporting days, I worked in North Florida. I saw it, Panama City Beach, which they call the Redneck Riviera. Their words, not mine. Here's my concern, because businesses, while they wanted the business, they didn't want the white kids cutting up either. Okay. And I reported on it. My problem is, and we've talked about this program, at some point we have to be responsible for our own foolishness. And these two murders, there was one of the people killed was a black student.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
The suspects that have been arrested, are black men. And so I don't have a problem. If you are of age, you can go down there and cut up all you want to. But, have fun, learn your drinking lessons and all of that. But assaulting people, murder, and all of those other things, we've got to be better. We've got to do better, Ebony.
It was interesting, even in reading this story, some of the comments that were coming out of when the city manager they did the vote, and you had the commissioner come out and say, he said, this is like acknowledging we have a problem, but we don't want to take bold action because we don't want to piss off important businesses in the city. And so there was this conversation going back and forth and whether it was going to be, whether we're going to restrict alcohol sales or whether we'll put the curfew in order. And another member said, who was the commission's sole vote against the measure, said this is like rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. Mm-hmm. You know, that people will get liquor no matter what. I'm just like, so what is it that, is this about money at the end of the day? Is it about lives at the end of the day? And also, we've got to send a message to those students who are going down there, because guess what? Somebody's parent doesn't have their child anymore.
Right.
Like
absolutely.
Saying, like the real face. Somebody is making funeral arrangements, looking at their policy because of this foolishness.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is, you know, how do you fix that? Okay, you've got a curfew, and we remember what happened a couple of years ago in Miami. It was madness and mayhem. Police chasing these young people all over the place, running in the streets.
Right.
But you know, where is the balance? Because if you've been down there, they make millions of dollars during these holiday.
Yeah.
Weekends. It is expensive and people are spending the money.
And we're coming out of the pandemic, so businesses are looking to make that money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, look, a great conversation to both of you ladies, Ebony McMorris and Jamila Bay. I really appreciate your time. We will continue to keep our ears to the ground as it relates to the developing situation regarding former President Donald Trump. It's our understanding that the grand jury in Manhattan will be meeting yet again tomorrow. So anything can happen, and certainly rest assured you will hear it here with the latest. Ebony, Jamila, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, March 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.